the last episode of Modern Practice, we discussed the latest in CDI software technology. On this episode, we'll continue our discussion by considering the best way to use this technology and how the critical thinking skills of CDI specialists and coders are crucial to this process. I'm your host, Dr. Tom Villanueva, Principal for Operations and Quality at Vizient and Practicing Internist. I welcome back Rachel Mack, Consulting Director at Vizient. Rachel, glad to have you back.
Thank you so much, Tom. Glad to be back.
So in the last episode, we spoke about the importance that the CDI software technology does not replace a CDS. So what are essentials for CDI specialists to be aware during the concurrent reviews when using this kind of CDI software technology?
Excellent question. I think that there's several things that they need to be aware of. So depending on which program you use, some programs, they kind of auto-assign cases to CDI specialists where their manager doesn't really have to do a whole lot of that work, which is really, really nice. Other programs, managers kind of still have to go in there and assign patients accordingly. And let's say they're switching off units every couple of months and things like that. But whatever the case may be, during your concurrent review, you've got a patient in front of you. So click on it, open the case. Again, I cannot yell this from the rooftops loudly enough. But during your concurrent review, regardless of how amazing, how awesome your CDI software is, do your job in a way that you've always done it. Take the EMR, take that source of truth, and start reviewing that record from beginning to end. My advice, I've definitely trained new CDI specialists. I've audited CDI specialists. I treat cases like a story. And if you pick up a case and you just start looking at random labs, looking at this, that, or the other, it's not going to make any sense. You kind of have to start from the beginning. So my advice, again, I know people do things a variety of different ways, but I start reading the notes first. To me, that tells me what in the world I'm going to be looking for. And two, what could possibly be missing? If I saw sepsis in the ED note and it completely fell off the H&P, that is almost a slam dunk query opportunity for me as a CDI specialist to rule that in or rule that out. So start from the beginning, read the case through like a story, then look at labs and scans, any vital signs, any nursing notes, any nursing documentation and flow sheets, anything to support that story being told. And again, that's when your critical thinking CDI brain starts putting the pieces together for what's not here. I think, again, the primary answer to this question is a lot of CDI specialists, either they were trained this way or they think this way. They go into a record and they're looking for things that are already there that they can add to their encoder or their grouper and that they can code. Really, the CDI specialist's job during concurrent reviews, you are a detective, you are an investigator, you are looking for things that are not there. And that's a real brain flip, I think, for some CDI specialists to hear, especially if they've been doing this job for a while and haven't quite viewed it that way.
So one thing we've noticed, particularly during the pandemic, is that the CDSs went from being on the floors to many of them now working virtual, or even just the whole CDS or CDI program is now centralized. Has that affected the relationships or even just the outcomes when it comes to what you're looking for your CDI programs?
I am sure that it has. Prior to the pandemic, I had the privilege when I was a CDI specialist of working 2 days at home and working 3 days on site. That to me, that was the perfect. Like when I was at home, I could crank out records. I could get a little bit more done. You know, when I was on site, that's when I would go down to the ICU. I'd go down to the units, talk to physicians, become their best friend, or at least try to talk to them about how important CDI was. So I do think that this virtual piece, I think it maybe has made some teams quite a bit more productive. If you're an introvert and you're just cranking out work, I think that's awesome. But I think the in-person educational component for physicians and providers has really, really been lacking, compounded on the fact that they are, and you know this, Dr. Tom, being worked to the absolute bone during these times. Now they've got all of these other responsibilities. They've got 12 more patients than they did 2 years ago on a daily basis. I think it's kind of led CDI to be a little bit more on the back burner than it really should be.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. So what about coders? What's essential for them to think about when using this kind of technology?
So that is an excellent question. So coders are some of my favorite people in the world. They just are. I had the privilege to work with 3 or 4 fantastic ones in the first 2 years of my job, where if I miscoded something or forgot something or overlooked something, we just were able to have really great conversations and they were really able to build me up to give me the coding part of my CDI brain that I think a lot of CDSs overlook, right? They don't think it's important. They don't think they need to know their guidelines. To me, that could not be further from the truth. But coders have been using some type of technology either the same amount of time or longer than CDI specialists have. Many of them have been using what's called computer-assisted coding. It's typically abbreviated CAC. Many, many CDI software technologies have been utilizing that for a long time, way, way longer than artificial intelligence and prioritization and things like that. And so what's essential for them is with these computer-assisted coding programs, sometimes it's very easy to just code stuff. Just code it as it's written. Who cares if it's in a past medical history or if it's in a current assessment and plan? Because you start to be a little bit of a robot doing this job over and over again. If it's your 15th COVID case for the day, it's kind of like your 15th heart failure case for the day. You kind of start to go on autopilot. So I think it's essential for them, again, to use their critical thinking coding skill. Yes, it's their job to code what's documented, but that doesn't mean that they are not to say, hey, something seems off. This is not right. This wasn't pulled in correctly. This doesn't seem to be a current problem. This problem list dates back to 2007. Those are the types of things they should be doing as they're coding. And in my humble opinion, I think that the coders across the country have gotten a lot better at that in the last 2 or 3 years. They've really honed in that skill as they are using the computer-assisted coding piece.
Are the CDSs also still a major component, considering that quite a few coders don't have a clinical background?
Yes. So I mentioned on our previous episode that the technology piece plus the CDI specialist piece is like the perfect team. When you take technology plus a CDI specialist who is clinical plus a coder with that coder background, that is the true marriage of what a perfect CDI and coding program is. I mentioned just a couple minutes ago, I think it's really hard sometimes for CDSs to learn all their coding guidelines, to remember them, to remember you have to look them up, to remember that they change. Not only do they change every year, but they get updated every quarter. It gets, if I can be very transparent, it gets kind of annoying. As a CDI specialist, you're clinical. You want to just figure this stuff out. But I think the clinical component of the CDI specialist doing that portion of their job, querying, getting stuff permanently in the record or correctly getting something out of the record, as coders see CDSs do that, I think coder skills grow more and more as they work with CDI specialists really closely. They can see, oh yeah, that's why they asked that query. That's why they sent that. I'm not crazy. I was thinking that person was confused or had heart failure or whatever the case may be. So I think it's the three components that really make that great marriage of CDI and coding and technology.
So Rachel, when I look at big picture here, I think what I'm seeing is that there's a science to the CDI component, but quite frankly, there's an art, just like medicine as a whole. So what are the keys to being successful in the CDI space and to the best use of technology that you have available today?
I think the keys to being successful in the CDI space are, one, to just own or make yourself an amazing adult learner. I think everyone listening, and Dr. Tom, I think you as well, because you work with physicians, so you know, change is really, really hard. Adult change management is really, really tough. And I think it's really easy for nurses, for coders, for physicians as well, who've been doing their jobs for a long time, to think that they know everything, to think that they don't need to be asking certain questions, to think that they don't need to poke the bear. And to me, that just could not be further from the truth. I think ongoing learning and committing to making yourself grow and change every quarter, every year as things grow and change, I think that that is essential. The other thing too is don't be scared of technology. A lot of people in the CDI space, and this has changed a little bit over the last few years, but some people in the CDI space are a little bit older. And even I've met younger people who really don't utilize the technology skills that they have or that they could have. They don't utilize these programs the way that they could. Regardless of your age, regardless of where you're from or really what your job is in this space, learn whatever software you're using inside and out. I think that a lot of us would be shocked to know what some of these programs can do for us and can remind us to do in 2 days and all these things. And I think that a lot of people are not utilizing it in the best way that they could because they're afraid or they're just used to doing things the way that they've always done them.
Always look to new ways to improve on your skill set. I couldn't agree more.
Amen.
In the previous episode, we kind of touched on a little bit about AI, but can you tell us a little bit what you think is going on in the future regarding the CDI technology and how we can use it?
Yeah. So there have been a couple of attempts, a few companies who have really tried to do what these other programs have done for CDI specialists and for coders. They've tried to do them for physicians. What's so odd is I haven't seen a ton of success in that. So I'll give you an example. Like there's some programs out there where if you're a physician and you're documenting this H&P and you document CHF or you document heart failure, there are some programs out there that can kind of like pop up a little reminder and say, hey, tell me what kind of heart failure and tell me the acuity, please. And thank you. The issue with that, at least from my experience from talking to physicians that have used this, is it's kind of like for nurses in the ICU, at least in my experience, it's that alarm fatigue. you get so many pop-ups and so many clicks, you kind of start to ignore them. But I think that there is some growth. Physicians in this point are everything. We're not going to get things answered or final coded or billed appropriately without their interaction. And I think a lot of times they kind of get left to the back burner. People give up on them. Oh, he never answers anything. Oh, she's the worst. Oh, he's the, you know, whatever, yada, yada, yada. If we don't have their partnership, we're kind of screwed, for lack of a better word. So I think that there is a huge growth potential for fixing this, or at least the low-hanging fruit on the front end, and letting CDI specialists then get to the high-hanging fruit, the quality indicators, preventing hacks, doing all this risk adjustment stuff. Right now, CDSs are still querying, and I mentioned this diagnosis in the other episode, but CDSs are still having to query for hyponatremia. We really shouldn't be living in that world. And so I think that there is huge growth potential coming up, either in the dictation space or in the automized documentation space, for physicians to fix or to support them in fixing some of this pretty bare bones stuff on the front end.
As a practicing physician, I can tell you anything that helps me with my flow that I'm willing to work with. But if it's going to interrupt my flow, we're going to have a discussion.
Exactly. And I feel like the people who make some of these apps for phones, I feel like those are the type of people who should be working with these CDI and coding firms.
Yeah.
Because the flow is so easy on the app on the phone. I don't know how to translate that appropriately into a laptop or into a computer to make it super easy. But right now it is a little bit cumbersome. Even the query process is a little bit cumbersome the way it's set up.
Outstanding. Well, that's all the time we have for this episode. I want to thank Rachel Mack for joining us. And if you'd like to contact Rachel, we put her email address in the resource section of our podcast page. And if you have any additional questioning pertaining to modern practice, or simply want to send us a comment, please contact us at our email at modernpracticepodcast.com. We've posted a link in our resource sessions as well. And please join us for other Modern Practice podcasts. Subscribe today, like us, and send us your comments. I'm Dr. Tom Villanueva. Thank you so much for listening.